12 of the Laps of the Gods. What might be called the Davos curse seems to have continued, as there have been many more media job cuts and organisations like Adani are now in spectacular financial disarray. The government of Ukraine itself may be increasingly abandoned by its sponsors. It is interesting that following Seymour Hersh's long CIA-informed essay attributing the destruction of the Nord Stream pipeline directly to the Biden administration, the New York Times and Washington Post have now suggested the bombers were Ukrainian. Whilst Hersh's piece did seem over-focused on one perpetrator, the new CIA supposition is logistically impossible, and there may be truth in the argument that this supposition against Ukraine is being used, especially in Germany, to begin uncoupling allegiances with the Zelensky regime. Since the Maidan coup, at least partly organised by the ubiquitous Victoria Nuland, a member of the even more ubiquitous neocon Kagan family, one intelligence function of the Ukrainian government has been to destabilise Russia politically and financially. As this strategy seems to be proving unsuccessful, it has been suggested that sections of the CIA may wish to disassociate themselves from the Ukraine war, perhaps to concentrate resources on a projected war with China, ostensibly over Taiwan. Again, that disassociation would involve a predictable betrayal of a surprisingly naive asset, but from the point of view of this essay, I wonder if we can speculate that one key clue that the asset will be betrayed is in the extent of the sexuality involved. There are numerous examples, such as the publishing house of Robert Maxwell, and by extension his daughter Ghislaine, who described as a child how her father made her choose which implement with which he would beat her, or the intelligence-gathering activities of the masseur and artist Stephen Ward. There is a feeling that Western intelligence agencies, including those of Israel, view espionage projects that are intrinsically sexual as intrinsically expendable from the start. For at least a decade, sexual aspects of the Ukrainian power and propaganda structure, including sadomasochism, fascist symbols, and theories of racial purity, have been cultivated in Ukraine by Western agencies. Involvement in such nefarious processes always seems to include indiscreet anomalies and dubious accidents, perhaps because there tends to be an over-recruitment of indiscriminate people, some of whom have a sexuality involving self-revelation or the implication of each other. One such accident of interest to us is the notorious recent German announcement of intended tank supply to Ukraine, in which the only two numbers given were 14 and 88, estimates, not concrete tallies, which linked together are almost always the clandestine sign for a network of white supremacist organisations whose slogans involve the need for children to be white and the survival of, quote, beauty of the white Aryan woman, unquote. Needless to say, the internet went wild, with some of the milder commentators suggesting that the German government could have at least varied one of those explosive numbers. Ever since operations like Paperclip, in which MI6 and the CIA rescued and rehabilitated many Nazis, partly to work on anti-communist projects, the intelligence agencies have toyed with Germany. Events like the Nord Stream destruction and even strange, jovial asides like 1488 suggests that this continues, always with an element of warning, although the tantalising prospect of full rearmament is also held before German eyes, as it is before the eyes of Japan. Near the beginning of this essay, I quoted an experienced Soviet spy that he had no experience of the use of honey traps such as those depicted in Red Sparrow, and I suggested that sexual situations such as those of the Maxwells and the setting up of Julian Assange were more literary and had a more conceptual narrative quality than did normal everyday espionage. Another example of the former, of course, would be the Skripal case, where the desire of a Russian spy turned Western asset to return again to Russia with his daughter seems to have been turned by MI6 into an adventure, where he was attacked by a mythical, mysterious poison, only to vanish with his daughter, the whole thing as if pre-scripted for a docodrama series on the BBC, which it indeed duly became. Considering honey traps further, however, I wonder if in fact the use of various forms of sexual manipulation isn't more peculiar to Western intelligence agencies, and according to our current thesis, might therefore make them more prone to discard and betray their assets, unlike China or Russia, at least since World War II, when Russia did betray Richard Sorge in Japan. This sexuality would also explain why there seems to be differing degrees of consent by the discarded assets. Another interesting aspect of the process towards a manipulative narrative involves the book as sexual object and book burning. When I was in my teens and early 20s, I regarded books as a direct sexual form and the act of reading as erotic and largely equal with two creators, in keeping with certain aspects of postmodernism. Although my ideas were independent of postmodernism, which became popular at local universities well after that, I was ambivalent about libraries, as there was something odd about the serial sharing of a sexual partner. And I remember stating that libraries were a form of brothel, although compatible with free thinking, also that there was actually nothing wrong with that. In regard to the vertical sexuality of publishing, the publisher in a hierarchy descending down to the employees and the authors, I've noticed that the more politically conservative publishers seem to regard books as independent objects of sensuousness and reverence, perhaps in keeping with postmodernism, produced by them for the awe of the author but the consumption of the reader. This would seem compatible with the fact that some of the more experimental forms of art in the last century were sponsored by conservative forces such as the CIA. At any rate, the ritual of vast public book burning as practiced by the Hitlerjugend and presently by the government of Ukraine, particularly in regard to Russian classics like Tolstoy, can be seen as a form of symbolic SM communication. It is a public display and a private message, like the torture in plastic wrapping. I wonder, however, if the audience for the message is as reliable as the practitioners believe. Those intelligence agencies who have instigated such systems may be suggesting tastes and beliefs that they themselves only assume at will, even though often genuine. And the international SM fraternity as such finally seems impressionable but fickle. I am reminded of the New York documentary film The Booksellers, where at one point one of the booksellers holds an ancient necromantic volume made of human skin and says the correct response is not to recoil but to want to hold it. Even though, unlike in Ukraine, the last case adds a grisly form of acceptance, there is a powerful sexuality in the linking of books with annihilation.